If you see Carissa Schlachter, Caitlin Davison, Holly Wheeler, Tess Campbell, Emma Kish, Grace Kish, Maddie Seagraves, or Michelle Kish, or Brittany McCormick, or Suzette Ansay, would you just hug their necks? I'm serious. They came together, especially those young adults and our teens came together and put together the Treasure Valley Girls Conference that took place yesterday, and it was fantastic. And I'm talking like I was there, and I wasn't, but I heard all about it, and they did a fantastic job with that. And so if you see them, just congratulate them, tell them thank you, ask them about it. If you see any of our teen girls, ask them about the Treasure Valley Girls Conference, what they did, what they talked about. There might have been some axe throwing involved and stuff like that. And so, but it was a phenomenal event. And I cannot thank those ladies and those teen girls enough for coming together and planning that. So thank you. Thank you so much for doing that. In the third or fourth grade, I developed quite a passion for reading. And I loved to read, and so much so that one Christmas, my parents decided to get me a lamp that was a clip-on lamp, and I could clip it onto my nightstand or my bed or move it all around, and I could adjust the light right where I wanted it to shine, all that good stuff. And I was so excited about it. And not only that, that same Christmas, you know, when we did the gift exchange with all my cousins and aunts and uncles, I think one of my aunts had me that year, but she also got me a lamp that was a clip-on lamp. And when I went over and took it to my mom and dad, my mom, you know, whispered to me, she said, if you want to take this back and exchange it, we can. I said, oh, no, because when my other one wears out or breaks, I've got a replacement. See, I loved to read, and I enjoyed it so much. The other thing is that I'm the youngest of four boys, and we grew up in a house that was four bedrooms, two baths, and that means that some of us had to share rooms. And so my brother Kelly and I, we shared a room. For all your older siblings who just say that the youngest always gets everything, I had to share my room, so suck it up. I didn't get my own room until my oldest brother left, okay? And so we shared a room, and we had bunk beds in the room, and these weren't your ordinary bunk beds, okay? When I walk into furniture stores and I look at the bunk beds especially, I evaluate them based on this. As a kid, how long would that bunk bed last? And tops, nowadays, the way furniture is made, tops is 4 to 6 weeks, okay? But our bunk beds, they were heavy duty, made out of 2x6s that were bolted together with lag bolts. So it could be a hurricane and a tornado and an earthquake and a volcanic eruption. Everything would be rubble except our bunk beds. They were so well constructed. And one day, my brother decided, he said, you know, I would like to have a lamp up on my bed so I can read. I was so excited because my brother was taking an interest in something that I was so passionate about. So I went and grabbed my extra lamp and I tossed it up there on his bed. And he dropped the cord down between the bunk bed and the wall, and I plugged it in for him. Now, our bunk beds, they were the ones that, you know, the standard ones are like this, but that bottom bunk bed, we could move it all around or whatever. So his bed was on one side of the room, and my bed was on the other, and we had our dresser underneath his bed. So I plugged that thing in, and he grabbed it, and I remember this. I don't know why I remember this, but he grabbed this little New Testament pocket Bible. It was red, and he began to read it. I thought, this is great. We were sharing a moment, and it lasted like 2 weeks. And he got tired of that lamp being up on his bed. And so he decided that he didn't want it up there anymore and he wanted it off. And so he starts to push on the wall in an attempt to make the bunk bed tip back away from the wall and drop down. And my brother and I, we were almost perfect children. And we only got in trouble around bedtime. And that's when this was happening. This was around bedtime. And it was making a lot of noise. And I said, Kelly, why don't you just unplug the cord and pull up the cord and drop it down on the floor? That would be so much easier. And we won't get in trouble. He said, no, I don't want to do it that way. So he continues to push on the wall. He's making noise. And you know that saying, when you at first you fail, then try again. Well, that was his motto that night. And so he also has a way of motivating me. And so he says, Jared, get up here and help me. I said, no, just unplug the lamp and drop it down. It's that easy. He said, no, get up here and help me. I don't want to do that. I said, no, I'm not getting up there. We're going to get in trouble. And here's where the motivation came in. He said, Jared, get up here or else I'm going to come down there and punch you. I said, okay. And so I get up on the bed. And we're there and we're pushing against the wall, trying to get the bed, the tip away from the wall so the lamp could fall down. And it's rocking back and forth and we're making all kinds of racket. And again, my brother's motto, if at first you fail, then we'll get there. And he did. He said, okay, this isn't working. So let's lay on our backs and we'll put our feet up on the wall and we'll push. Right. And so I said, this is a great idea. This is a genius idea. You're the older brother. You're way smarter than I am. And so we're laying on our backs with our feet up on the wall and we're pushing and we're pushing it and we're rocking that thing back and forth. We're making all kinds of noise. And at one point we thought we were successful and it slams back down. The bed slams back down into place and we look and the lamp is still there. And Kelly says, OK, we've almost got it. Just one more try, 1, 2, 3, push real hard and we'll get it. And so we do. We 1, 2, 3, and we push and we tip the bed back and we hear the lamp drop. And we thought, success. We've made it. We've done it, right? But the one thing we didn't take into account was the dresser. Because you see, the dresser was tall enough that it was just right under my brother's bunk. And so when we heard it, what we thought hit the ground, it actually hit the dresser. And so what happened, we were so excited that we thought we were successful that when we let go of the wall and the bed smashes back down into place, it had taken that lamp and it smashed into the lamp and pushed a hole right into the wall. And right when that happened is when our door flew open and there was my dad. And I think I walked on air that night because I might have touched the ground once, but I flew from my brother's bed in the mine. And parents have a look, right? Parents have that look when they're angry and they are stern and they have this look that says, I brought you into this world and I will take you out. You know that look. And that's the look that my dad had. And I thought, he's going to introduce us to Jesus tonight. And he looks at us, he looks at me, he looks at my brother Kelly, and he says, what do you think I am, stupid? I look up to my brother. And I am thankful that he was the oldest at that moment. Because he took the responsibility as the older brother to respond first. And I have always thought that my brother was courageous and that he was brave. And he looked at my dad right in the eyes. And with his most brave and courageous voice, he was fearing for his life. He said, no, not very. What flashed through my mind like this was, you idiot. And I burst out laughing. I did. And my dad looks at me and I stop. I was biting my tongue, trying to keep from laughing. And he looks at my brother Kelly and he says, what? And you know, when you realize you've made a mistake and you try to correct that mistake and it only makes it worse. Kelly realized what he had said. And he tries to correct his mistake. And he says, no, that's not, I didn't, is what I meant was that you're not very stupid. Not only did my brother call my dad stupid once, but twice, straight to his face. My dad looks at both of us, and all he says was, I better not hear another noise from this room. And he turns the light off, walks out, and closes the door. And my brother and I, we just lay there in silence. We go to sleep. And we didn't talk about that incident for several more days. And it wasn't until years later, we were laughing about that story. And we asked my dad, he's like, what were you thinking when that happened? And he said, I was so shocked at what Kelly said that I didn't know how to respond. And in fact, what I wanted to do was laugh. But I knew that if I did, you guys were in trouble. You were out of line with what you were doing. And he said, you were in trouble, but I couldn't lose that fact with you boys. And so I just walked out. And I went to the living room, sat down, and I laughed. But I think of that story, and I wonder if sometimes we treat God in the same way. Now, hear me out. And stick with me here, because I know some are thinking, well, I don't call God stupid. And let me stop here for a moment. I shared this story years ago, and I had a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old come up to me after the lesson, and they said, you used a bad word in your lesson. I was like, no, I didn't. I'm arguing with a 3- and 4-year-old. No, I didn't. No, you did. You used the S word. It's like, I didn't. No, I'm thinking through my sermon, and their mom was right behind them, and she's mouthing, you said stupid. I said, oh, and so I apologize. So I won't use that word anymore if that's a bad word in your house. But sometimes we do that with God, and let me illustrate it this way. And I'm going to get to the second point next, and we're going to zero in on the term peace, all right? And so keep that in the back of your mind, zeroing in on the term peace. But let me illustrate it this way with how we may treat God sometimes. When you do, if you have a Bible app or if you have a really good concordance in the back of your Bible, you can look up the term peace. And in the NIV, as you start to scroll through or thumb through all of those, you get the Judges, and here's what it says. So the Lord had peace, so the land had peace for 40 years. And the land had peace for 80 years. And then the land had peace 40 years. And the land enjoyed peace for another 40 years. And so what was happening in the book of Judges was that the Israelites, they were, going along, everything smooth. And then all of a sudden they decide, well, we've got this on our own. We can do this, and we know what we're doing. God, you can take a seat. And then God says, no, it doesn't work that way. I need you to follow my commands that I have in place for you so that it can go well with you. And since you're not, then, well, this nation is going to come in and punish you. And that's what happened. And then after a generation of that punishment, then the Israelites would begin to cry out to God and say, God, please deliver us from this oppression. We can't handle this anymore. And so God would send a judge to clean up the mess and get rid of the oppressive nation. And then they would have peace in the land for another 40 or 80 years or whatever it is. In the ESV, you'd have to look up the word rest to see that in Judges. But we see that all through the Old Testament, that cycle of the Israelites, God's chosen people, that they, from time to time, they would say, God, don't be so silly. We've got this. We know what we're doing. And then things would just go haywire and become chaotic and disorderly in their own lives, and punishment would have to happen. And then a prophet or a judge or whatever would come along and clean everything up. And it was a cycle. And it goes on into the New Testament. If you just read through the Gospels, you see this this dynamic working out between the Pharisees and Jesus. And oftentimes they were at odds with each other and butting heads. And the Pharisees were very keen on the law and making sure that the law was being done in a very specific way. And what Jesus was saying is like, listen, yes, okay, the law is important here, but it's the author of that law. It is God that is more important. And so there's this dynamic working out, even in the Gospels, where people are saying, well, I've got this, I'm doing this. And Jesus is saying, no, it's God. And then you get into the epistles and you see that what the authors are writing there with regards to writing to the different churches and to individuals, and this idea of, hey, follow. And at that time, it's, you know, Jesus Christ is the author of our salvation. And that's the one we are to be following. And that is where our focus is to be. And if it gets away from that, then things get chaotic. And so there's this loop that we get in at times, and we say, you know, God, you're so silly. I've got this. And God, I think, is saying, but my plan is so easy if you would just follow it. And so I want us to zero in on peace. A few weeks ago, I was doing some reading, and I was in the latter half of Hebrews and reading into James. And I came across this verse in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 14. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 14. And it reads like this: strive for peace with who? Strive for peace with who? Now some versions will say all men. My ESV says everyone. And so there's this concept here that we are to be striving for peace, but not just striving for peace, but striving for peace with everyone. And then the author goes on, and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. Now, in the teen class, we went over this term a couple weeks ago in peace. And what I had them do, I said, pull out your phones if you have an app, or use your concordance in the back and just look up the word peace. And then all the verses that you come across, let's write those up on the board and what the specific instruction is with regards to peace. And over again, what you will find if you do that yourselves, and we don't have time this morning to go through all those verses because there are a bunch. But what you'll see playing out is this concept of we are to be striving for peace, or seeking out peace, or going towards peace. And so we're writing down all these verses, that this idea that peace is important and we are to be striving for peace. But there's something else that takes place that you'll see too, and it's here in this verse, that we're striving for peace, but not just striving for peace just for ourselves, but striving for peace with those around us, with the people that we interact with, the people we may work with. Although that's an unfair statement for me, because the people I work with, they're okay except for Clint. He's difficult sometimes. It's okay to have disagreements. I mean, really, it is. It's okay to disagree with people. You see, our world today says that if there's a disagreement, if someone disagrees with me, then that person becomes public enemy number one. And I must do everything I can to convince that person of my position or my opinion and turn their mind to what I am thinking is correct. And even if that means I destroy that person or destroy a relationship with that person. It's okay to have disagreements. It's okay to walk away from those disagreements and to say, you know what, I think at this point we're going to agree to disagree. I respect your position. I respect your opinion. I don't agree with it. And vice versa. And still maintain friendship and maintain decorum. I think of it this way. I think we need to have that mindset. Wes McAdams once said, you will never meet somebody that Jesus didn't die for. And so if I am in a bitter disagreement with someone, well, guess what? Jesus died for them just like he died for me. And so I have a responsibility to strive for peace with that person, just like Christ has striven for peace with me. And so that's important. If you turn over, keep a thumb there in Hebrews 12, turn over to James chapter 3. James chapter 3. We'll begin in verse 13. Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but it is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder in every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make what? Who make peace. A harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. When you look at Hebrews 12, 14, and strive for peace with everyone and for holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. There's a concept that is tied to peace. And that's the holiness in Hebrews 12 and righteousness in James 3. And when you do that word search again and you start working through all of those verses, you'll see things like strive for peace and righteousness, or strive for holiness and peace. Holiness and righteousness are connected to peace. And they coexist with one another. You cannot have righteousness without peace. You cannot have holiness or purity without peace. And you'll see that in those verses time and time again, that righteousness and holiness is tied to peace. And so you can't have one without the other. And so as you read James and you get down to that, and a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace, how many people do you know that are righteous that are just angry and chaotic and just disorderly, the opposite of peace? You don't see that. And so somebody who is striving for peace, you also see righteousness within them. I think of this passage, and you can connect it to what Paul says in Galatians 5 with the fruits of the Spirit. The fruits of the Spirit are peace. It's just this row right here that knows the fruits of the Spirit. Those are characteristics that we are defined by if we walk by the Spirit. Now, peace is in there. Peace is a part of the fruit of the Spirit, just like it is here in James, there, verse 17. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable. But if you look above there in Galatians 5, those people who don't walk by the Spirit, you see the characteristics that are listed there. And those are, I'm kidding, I don't expect anybody to have that memorized. But it's things like anger and malice and sexual immorality and debauchery. And there's a whole list of things there that define a person that does not walk by the Spirit. And the same thing, James is doing the same thing here if we were to just work through this passage. So, who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct, let him show you his works in the meekness of wisdom. And then we get into the person that may not be walking by the Spirit, but instead, here James uses wisdom from above and earthly wisdom. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. James does not mince words here when it comes to living by wisdom from above or living by this earthly wisdom. When it comes to living by the Spirit or not, there are things that determine who we are and define our character and mark us in our character as a child of God or not. And if we're going to be full of this bitter jealousy and selfish ambition and make it about ourselves and say, God, I've got this, you're being silly, well, then these are the things that define us. We are unspiritual. We are demonic. And he goes on from there. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above. Verse 16, I'm sorry. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be what? disorder. That's the opposite of peace. There will be disorder in every vile practice. There will be disorder in every vile practice. If I want to choose to live by the wisdom of this order, of this earth, getting excited. If I choose to live by the wisdom of the earth, then that's going to mark my character and that's going to show who I am. But God says, if you just would follow my plan, it is simple and easy. Just like Jesus says, you know, take my yoke upon you, it is light. James goes on, but the wisdom from above is first what? Pure. We could say holy, full of righteousness. It's pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. Those are the things that mark a person that lives by the wisdom from above. But what you see in there is a term that is peaceable or peace. You see that in the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5. You see it here in James chapter 3. But it's always tied to righteousness, peace is. And you see that at the end. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. And so if I'm striving for peace and I'm seeking to be a peaceable person and I am working towards that and trying to live right in my life and live according to the standards that God has for me, then what is the harvest going to be for me? James says that that harvest for me is a harvest of righteousness. Think of the fruits of the Spirit again. When you start to see those characteristics, that harvest is going to be harvested, or those fruits and grains and vegetables, all that stuff is going to be harvested at some point, and people will see that. And in this case, what James is saying, if we're living by that peace, then people will see our righteousness. But more importantly, our righteousness will be noticed by God. And that's what's important. We get into this cycle, just briefly. We get into the cycle where we say, God, I've got this. Don't be silly. And God just says, listen, strive for peace. Strive for peace with everyone. And when you do that, you're going to reap that harvest of righteousness. And you'll be holy and set apart for me. And that should be the plan that we follow. Instead of saying over and over again, God, I've got this. Because we know where that goes. We know that's chaotic and disorderly, and it makes life difficult. If there is anything that we can do for you today, if you want to put on Christ in baptism, or you want encouragement from the congregation and prayers of the congregation, would you please come as we stand and sing?